What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in the studio, Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. Screen time is the Goliath that we've been fighting for years now. Over the years, we've had so many wonderful people join the cause and lead the fight against screen dependency in their area. And today, we have with us someone who is making a big difference and is offering a solution to our screen time dilemma. Emily Churkin, did I say it right? Churkin?
Yes.
Emily Churkin is the screen time consultant. She's also a parent, speaker, former classroom teacher, and the author of the newly released book, The Screen Time Solution, The Judgment-Free Guide to Becoming a Tech Intentional Parent. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I've been following you on Instagram for a while, so it's good to finally put face to face, sort of.
I appreciate that.
Virtually.
right. Thank heavens for Zoom.
Yes.
You have quite the story, the journey, the background, and it all started with you as a teacher, teaching middle school.
Yes.
What subject did you teach?
Seventh grade English.
Oh my goodness. My wife taught that. Oh. My wife taught seventh grade English.
I love her already.
For 2 years over in Logan before we moved to Tooele County and I became a school counselor.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I love middle schoolers.
Bless your soul. Why? Because just kidding.
Because, oh man. But I get that reaction a lot. Like you love seventh grade. Well, I hated seventh grade myself. It was like the worst year of school, but right. I just had so much empathy for that age group. And I feel like they're still children, but trying so hard to be grown up. And like, it's that, that's why tween is such a beautiful word to describe that age group.
So what was your experience as a teacher? I mean, you taught for what, 15 years?
12 years in the classroom.
12 years. Yeah. What was your experience there?
Well, you know, it was fascinating because I started in 2003 when no one had a phone. I mean, like, there was like one kid whose mom made him take a flip phone to school and he was mortified, right? Like so embarrassing. My mom's overprotective. And then in the beginning, I was seventh grade English. And then I ended up adding on like some social emotional learning curriculum. I did some anti-bullying work, you know, kind of embedded within my content, but ended up realizing that, you know, so I would survey my students and I realized pretty quickly that about 5-6 years in that they were coming into the classroom talking about social media stuff. And what was really interesting is it was social media stuff. Of course, it was Facebook back in the day.
Right. The OG.
Exactly. But they would come in and they'd be like, you know, so-and-so made an I hate, you know, whatever name Facebook group and everybody's like, you know, talking about it and I'm not a part of it and I feel really left out. And it, what was interesting is that actually the social media use came before the phones in my experience, right? So it was actually what was happening at home was starting to come into the classroom. And I thought, I have to talk about this. No one's going to listen to the vocab lesson if they're all stressing about what's happening online at home.
Right, right.
And of course, at the beginning, I did the like, oh, well, you know, you need to do X, Y, and Z and you should be nice online. And I was very like adult talking to kids. And then I'm like, started hearing from them like, well, wait a minute, you know, my mom's texting and driving and my dad's like scrolling through social media or like they're playing games on their phones. This isn't just me. And I thought that was my aha moment. I was like, oh, this isn't a kid problem. This is a adult problem and it's affecting kids and we have to do something. So I pivoted a bit and started talking more about just technology use and talking to parents and ended up by the end of time I left the classroom, I was doing a little more parent education and I realized, I think that's where I want to do my job, you know? So I pivoted to more adult informed stuff, you know, parent education, workshops, coaching, that kind of thing. But by the time I left the classroom in 2015, 95% of my students had smartphones. So I always say like in a decade, just a decade, it went from zero to almost 100%. Like, so I think witnessing that change was really eye-opening for me as a teacher. And then I was becoming a parent myself at the same time. I joke that my son in 08, my daughter in 11, which is right around the time the iPhone and iPad came out. So I have my kids in alignment with Apple product releases, not on purpose.
Well, we're up to like the iPhone, like 20 something or whatever.
I know,
so
it's hilarious. I know. It's how I keep track of my kids' ages, but it was just a real, you know, and the other piece I will add to this is as a teacher, I was being increasingly asked to do things online for grading, you know, posting grades online and then homework, you know, posting that kind of.
Right.
I hated it. And I
Oh, yeah. Man. Was it hard to walk away from teaching?
Yes and no. And there, something happened for me personally that also really impacted it, which, and I didn't even put this in the notes, but we were in a pretty big car accident. And so I ended up having, actually it was 10 years ago this April. And I had a TBI, brain injury. And, you know, it was one of those things where when something happens in one area of your life, you don't make the connection to your other part of your life until you go, oh, wait, this actually makes a lot of sense. But the doctors were like, you have to stop looking at your phone. You can't be on your computer. You need to do brain rest. And I was like, wait a minute. Are you telling me that my use of screens is impacting my brain?
No.
Like, I was like, this is super important. What are we doing handing children these devices and, you know, putting them in schools all over the place? Like, it was a big aha moment for me. So it helped me make that move from the classroom. I do miss it sometimes, right. But I'm afraid I might be
aspects of it.
I think I might not be employable right now because I'm too much of a rabble rouser around screens in school. So I don't know if anyone would laugh at me, but
you and me both. You and me both.
Yep. It's worth the fight is how I feel.
Well, now you're a speaker and a consultant on the topic of parenting and screen time. When did you become, you know, so aware and passionate about specifically the effects of screen time with families?
Yeah. You know, I used to joke that I didn't have to do any marketing because people would just find me. And I picked the name, the Screen Time Consultant, in the beginning because I didn't know what else to do. And I'm sort of glad I did because it's a very Googleable search term.
Yeah, you are. Good heavens.
Yeah. So that worked out real well for the SEO. But, you know, I realized that as I was a parent myself, and my kids are now 15 and 12, that I could speak parent now, you know, and it was like, I could really understand how hard it was from the parenting side. But also as a teacher, I understood why that extra pressure coming from the schools was so challenging for families too. Right. And then I started my business before the pandemic. So, you know, what I always say is like, you know, as you know, pandemic just sort of added fuel to the fire. Screens were already an issue. They were already in school. Kids were already on social media. So it wasn't like, you know, 0 to 60, but it definitely accelerated it so quickly. So I just love talking to parents. So I just feel like I have a lot of empathy. I can talk about my own challenges as a parent. I'm the first to admit that I don't have it all figured out just because I'm literally the screen time consultant. It's like, my kids do get screens. And that's my philosophy is I take what I call tech intentional approach. You know, it's like about balance, just like anything, you know, intentionality and how we, you know, use stuff that's potentially harmful or problematic.
Man. And so you started your business before the pandemic?
Yeah.
Wow. Like 18, 19 or 20?
It was 2018, I think.
Man.
Yeah. July of 2018. Yeah.
And so you stopped teaching what, 2015?
Yes. 2015.
So how was that space between 2015 and 2018 when you were like,
ooh,
I see this. I see this big.
Right. Well, actually it was post-recovery car accident stuff, but I also ended up working a couple years at a center for people with ADHD and executive function challenges. Uh-huh. And there was a real aha moment there as well, because what would happen, and, you know, having been a teacher, I felt really comfortable working with kids, and I kind of ended up working mostly with middle school age because that was my comfort zone. And I loved working with that age, but I had adults and high school kids and college students, but what was so mind-blowing to me was like these kids would come in for support with mostly it was ADHD, but like no one was asking questions about their screen use. Like the intake questions weren't about like personal screen use. They weren't about screens for schools. And I actually write about this in the very beginning of my book, which I had a client come in, pull out her iPad. She was a sixth grader. She had an iPad for school. She had to do a science homework. She's opening all these tabs. Her book is online. She's writing the answers in a different app. She's toggling between, you know, windows on her computer or her iPad. And then I watch her type the question for her homework into Google, hit search results, cut and paste the first answer, put it in her doc. And I was like, do you know what plagiarism is? And she's like, well, yeah, kind of, but our teacher doesn't really read what we write. And I was like, well, that's problem number one. And then I said, well, okay, but, you know, what about putting it in your own words at least so you show that you understand it? And she goes, I don't know how to type. And that's when I go, I'm sorry, your entire, like, she had no pens, paper for her schoolwork.
How old was this person?
Sixth grade. It was a one-to-one program at her school.
She made it to sixth grade.
Yeah. And the school, well, I mean, more my feeling was like, why would you give iPads or any tech until kids have learned to type? Like, to me, that's what I always say.
This is 2018. They're already a one-to-one school with devices.
Yeah. They were piloting something. It was pretty early. So yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
Kamikaze pilot. Good heavens.
Exactly. But it was such an eye-opening moment for me. I was like, wait a minute, what? And this kid was like so distracted. I mean, I have colleagues who talk about, you know, having kids stay focused on laptops or iPads is like having an AA meeting in a bar. Like you're not setting them up for success when you establish it that way. So yeah, it was pretty mind blowing. So I did that for a couple of years. And that's when I really was like, okay, wait a minute. I need to separate myself from this and do my own approach. Yeah. Cause I also didn't want to limit my audience to only people with ADHD. Cause this is a problem that affects everyone. Right. So yeah.
So what is that approach?
Like, yeah.
How do we approach tech? What is that approach?
Right. So my TLDR, cause it's easy to remember it this way, is less is more, later is better, relationships first.
All right. So, break all that down.
All right. So yes, ma'am. Less is more. I take what I said, like a tech intentional approach. So I always say the number one question is always like, well, how much is too much? How much time should this kid have?
Right.
And I always say a little bit's okay and a lot's too much, which is super unhelpful because as you know, every kid is different. Every family is different. You know, it's like, it doesn't work to give a one size fits all answer when children aren't standardized. And no, so not. To me, that becomes, again, this is a parenting challenge, right? We have to think about, well, what I really talk a lot about values and aligning our screen approach with what we value in our family, you know, like, you know, how do you want it to look? And then of course, parental use, side note, is a huge component to successful screen time management for your children.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
And then later is better. I always say that no parent has ever told me, I wish I'd give my kids a phone sooner. I wish I'd done social media earlier. Every single parent tells me, I wish I'd waited. So, you know, to me, that's enough anecdotal evidence. And we know also from data that, you know, the earlier kids get devices and access, the more problematic things can be, the less happy they are later. Like, it's all out there now. Like, there's no secret that it's a problem. And then relationships before screens, you know, one of the things that I struggle with, and this is probably where I differ from a lot of people in my field, is like, I actually really don't recommend parental controls because what I see, now bear with me here. One of the things
everyone's gathering the pitchforks. What's going on?
That's right. But one of the problems I see is that parents think it's the solution without any of the
work. They don't do any of the communication. They don't anything. Amen. They slap up the parent controls and say, all right, hope is my strategy.
Yeah, exactly. And then when it doesn't work, they're like, I don't understand. Like, you know, my kid found the workaround. Well, I mean, I'm older than you, but I used to help my parents program the VCR, right?
It's like, they're smarter than you. That's their job.
Exactly. They're way tech savvier. And I mean, they have answers at their fingertips. They just Google, how do I work around this parental control? Yeah. So I always say, like, look, if you have it and it works for your family as a supportive tool, great. But the number of people who want it as the solution are going to be disappointed because, I mean, I have a whole lot of reasons why it doesn't work. But that's kind of the broad one. So relationships first. I mean, that's what we know is like more important than how much time your kid's online and what parental controls you use. More important, the things I really push for parents is, do you have a good relationship with your kids and do you know what they're doing online? Those are the questions I think are most important to start with.
Yeah. And let's be honest. If you're talking about something, it is much less of a curious forbidden fruit that they're going to want to go out and do themselves. If you're talking about pornography, if you're talking about, you know, sex, all these things that, you know, especially us, you know, Utah wimpos feel weird about, we don't talk about it in the home at all. Of course, your kid's going to look it up.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
The more you talk about it, the less they are curious.
I agree. It takes away that, you know, effect of like, oh, it's, I'm not supposed to, therefore now I want to know more.
Right.
And also, you know, I always say to parents, like, look, it's not a matter of if they see stuff, it's when.
It's when now. In this day, it's when.
Yeah. And so I think there are developmentally age appropriate ways to start talking early about 100%. All of this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think even back to like infancy, I know this is crazy. People always look at me, but one of my favorite strategies is to talk about is to live your life out loud. And I learned about this at the ADHD Center, but narrating what you're doing as you do it. And so like even with infants, you know, and this is hard because we want to get to parents before their kids are even walking and talking, right? But right. like, you know, you're putting your baby down and you narrate it. You say, I'm putting my baby down. I'm changing your diaper. I'm going to move this. Is the air feel cold? And this is also, this is Magda Gerber's work from Resources of Infant Educators. So this isn't my original idea, but I apply it to the screen piece. And, you know, what I see that is modeling consent from day one, right? So when they're 12 and 13 and someone's taking pictures of them, they say, you don't have my permission to take my picture. Now, doesn't mean people aren't going to do it. I'm not, right, you know, right. Just because you say no, doesn't mean people aren't going to do it, but they know they have the right to say no. They know right. they have, you know, that it's their body and their, you know, image. And, you know, I'm sure this is a whole nother podcast, but we could talk about AI and ChatGPT and generative imagery.
Oh yeah. Deep fake nudes and all that stuff. Fake pornography that's going on right now.
Yep.
There's a lot. So. And you, I'm a parent of two. I mean, with those ages, what, 12 and 15,
Yep.
How has your studies, you know, as a Scream Time consultant empowered you to raise these kids in this tech-heavy world?
Oh, great question. I always joke to my kids that if I were a dentist, we'd eat a lot less sugar. I just happen to be a Screen Time consultant. So we talk about screen time all the time. You know, I think really great is that, like you said, we've been talking about it. And because we talk about it all the time, I mean, my daughter will have her friends over and some of them have phones and some of them don't. She's in sixth grade. And I'll be like, oh, you know, there's porn on there. And I was like, you know, if you're doing something on that app right now, like, and someone talks to you that you don't know, please don't respond. Like, I am annoying, you know, and I'll like to throw in like, you know, do I have Riz just to really annoy them? Because that's my job as a parent.
Yeah.
But I really want them to know parents are paying attention. And actually, the strategy that I am finding really effective with my daughter right now is we share my phone. She doesn't have a phone.
Yeah.
So she texts from my phone. She does. We did agree to do Be Real, which I can tell you lots of things about Be Real. But I feel like given the knowledge that we've equipped her with, in part because she has the privilege and unfortunateness to have me as her mother, she's pretty savvy. And I, you know, to be clear, it's not like she hasn't made mistakes or won't. For example, she got me kicked out of my own business email account because of something she did on YouTube. And it wasn't her fault. And it was one of those things, I think she tried to log in too many times and it, you know, boots you out. But we had, again, for me, it's not about like, they're never going to mess up. And if I've learned anything from teaching middle school, it's that's like number one important thing is mess up and learn from your mistakes in middle school because it's the stakes are so much lower, you know, and, or they should be, I should say, I think it's changed, but, you know, so we talk all the time about it and probably to the point of like where my kids are sick of me talking about it, but, you know, but then like, you know, my daughter wrote an op-ed for her English class and the teacher was so impressed and it was all about why kids shouldn't have social media. And it's like, right. So
does that make you so proud?
Totally. It's a parenting win for sure. And I, you know, I don't want to like gloat too much about it, but that was like a huge, I feel grateful that we can talk about it. Honestly, that's it. Doesn't mean it doesn't cause issues. And my son, he didn't get a phone till 13, but like, he likes video games, you know, that's definitely the one that, and I am not a big fan, but we talk about it all the time and he does play video games. Like it's in the air that we breathe. And I just feel like that has to be everyday conversations. So,
And this occupation has really empowered you to have those and not be afraid of those conversations.
No, exactly. Kids. And full disclosure, my husband works in tech. I mean, I think that's the ultimate hilarious moment in all this too, is like, I always joke I'm married to the problem, you know, it's like
the ultimate oxymoron.
Exactly. But again, like it gives us opportunity for multi-dimensional conversation, right?
Like discussion around it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest solution, right? Yeah. Is discussion, communication.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
No amount of parental controls, no amount of blocking or anything can compensate for lack of communication.
No. And I call that digital whack-a-mole, right? When you try to block a bunch of stuff, something else is just going to pop back up in its place. And
100%.
I hear that all the time. So again, you know, I'm always really careful not to blame parents because I have so much empathy. Like it's not your fault, but it's our responsibility. That's how I like to.
Right. It's not your fault. You're not the problem. but you're kind of making it worse with a little bit.
Yeah. And being informed is empowering. And then you can always say, and what great modeling for your kids to say, like, I didn't know this and I know it now, and I'm going to need to do something differently because it's what's better for you and better for us. And, you know, and I own it. To own your mistakes. Oh my gosh.
That's super powerful. Mm-hmm. Now with schools, you're pretty passionate when it comes to the, you know, tech in schools with that stance of less is more.
Yes.
When did you start becoming involved with their schools? Cause I mean, you've worked with the boards and stuff like that. And some of them have been less pleasant than others. What has your experience been there, and you know, how you talk to the schools about that less is more?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I've been affiliated with my activism is through Fair Play, which used to be a commercial campaign for commercial free childhood.
I actually got a gig through Fair Play talking with Ventura, online company.
So I've been a part of their screens and schools activism group since 2018 well, or 2019, something around there. And from that, we sort of did a little offshoot group called the Student Data Privacy Project. And there are two attorneys and two activist parent teacher writers. Just so the four of us really decided to test the efficacy of FERPA, which is the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act that public schools are. It's basically the document back when I was a kid, and they would send home like, here's the school roster with your name and address, and you had to give permission to give that private information. Well, what's hilarious is that it hasn't been updated since 1974, which is even before I was born. So, I mean, this is the problem, right? And you know this, like, legislation just takes so much time to catch up to the problems, and technology changes so quickly. That's one of the things we're seeing, is just this big disconnect. So my activism is actually really a lot around student data privacy. What a lot of parents and many teachers even don't realize is that all of these platforms that schools are using, so anything from, like, you know, Schoology or Google Classroom or Canva or Seesaw or, you know, iXL or Prodigy, all of these platforms are third-party companies that, you know, are making money off of the data that they are using, that comes from the users of the kids in the schools that they're being used in. And to me, that is, you know, immoral and unethical, because parents don't consent. Kids are minors. Most people have no idea. And there's all these loopholes. And that's the problem, is that schools make it like, you know, they make it seem like, oh, well, no, we know, and we're in control. But there's a lot of kick the can. Like, the schools will say, oh, it's the tech companies have the data. And the tech companies are like, no, the schools have it. And one thing that I don't think people even realize is that on average, this is on average, and it ranges heavily, is that schools have about 125 to 150 unique ed tech platforms per school.
Whoa!
So it's not, right. So, and some of that's like, you know, like a teacher might just, I say, hey, kids, go to this thing. We're going to use this today. And it's not necessarily vetted from the district. But if it's 150, and, you know, even if one of them's good, 149 are siphoning data. So there's that problem. I mean, I sound tin-hatted when I freak about that, but it's hugely problematic. And there was, I highly recommend the ACLU's most recent report called Digital Dystopia, which is all about, like, ed tech surveillance, which is a whole different challenge. Yes. You know, like, cameras and reading kids' social media pages.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, what are we doing to kids? Because I think at the end of the day, all of us are here because we care about kids and trying to make the world a better place for them. And how we do it and the, you know, corners we come from, you know, might be slightly different arguments or fights. But to me, that's just the core of it. And, you know,
like
these companies don't have kids' best interests at heart. They have profits in mind, not people. You know?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. And all of this kind of comes to the climax where you wrote a book to outline all of this to help the world out, called The Screen Time Solution. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've been doing these public speaking events for 5 years now, and everybody would come up after and be like, well, do you have a book? And I've thought for a long time about writing one, but it takes some time and effort to put it all together. And actually, I had a draft ready before the pandemic. And what I realized was I can't write this book because I have to wait. I need to see what happens. And so I ended up revamping most of it for kind of a post-COVID world, because we all know that remote learning and isolation and increased screen use really changed things dramatically. Yeah, so
big time.
Yeah. So I wrote it with the intention of being the guide we wish we'd all had. It's really for parents of kids, I would say, of any age. It's funny. I kind of was trying to think of that birth to 10, because I always say it's the parents of kids 10 and up who find me, but the parents of kids 0 to 10 who need me. And So I wrote that kind of with this book in mind, like there's something for everyone. I would even consider, like, this is a great gift for parents of new babies, because it's like, hopefully the roadmap for like what's coming, so you can kind of prepare yourself now and make your those later years easier. And I tried to make it timeless so that it's not specific to apps and platforms. I mention them, but like, it's not only about what's modern day. It's like, you know, it's more about the parenting and the values and the approach than the actual content itself.
I like that. So what are some of the things that you go through with the screen time solution? I mean, obviously your less is more, you know, all your things you went through with us. What are some of the other things you outlined for parents that a lot of parents are like, oh, light bulb moment. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, a lot about our parent role in this, like the parent screen use, parent modeling. And again, not shaming or blaming. I think that's really was a goal too, is like, hey, I'm here. I'm with you. This is hard, but we can do better. And here's how I said some ideas for how you can do that. I try to also juxtapose like childhood from, because I get this all the time. Like, well, when I was a kid, I watched TV and played video games and I turned out fine. Well, yeah, I mean, but the biggest difference, as you know, is persuasive design, right? Like that didn't exist 10, 20 years ago. And so I compare, I mean, I talk about my childhood, which was an 80s, 90s childhood, but it's kind of a, unless you were born after 2000, like it's, you know, it's pretty different as a kid today than it was when, you know, adults were growing up, today's adults. And so I try to illustrate that. I talk a lot about executive function, because while that's certainly talked about in the context of ADHD, it's actually really applicable for all of us. And I think screen time really can interfere with some of that development. Yeah. Look at a little bit at some Piaget and stages of
Erickson.
No, I didn't do Erickson this time, but like not, I definitely don't want people to be like, oh no, it's too, you know,
You don't want to be gloom and doom.
No. And it's a very readable book. I mean, that again, I wrote it to make it feel like I was sitting there with you and going through stuff.
And I think that's one of the things that I most appreciate, is because, I mean, it's the screen time solution. A lot of people, because I mean, it is popular now to demonize social media and screen time. It's popular now. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, popular influencers are jumping on that train for the clout, for the followers.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people are pumping out just, you know, scare tactics and statistics with that.
Yeah.
Pumping out the world is scary, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening. This horrible crap's happening to your kid, which is, the data is useful to know. But when it's used in a context to cause fear, it frustrates me, because I want to help prepare. I don't want to scare.
Exactly.
And so I love that we're proposing solutions to screen time.
Thank you.
Because technology is not going anywhere.
Right.
It's not going anywhere. It's only going to increase in its abilities. It's only going to increase in its usefulness and in its way to become a tool. And yes, there's always going to be dangerous aspects to it. But we need to be able to use that technology in our lives and have it not be the center of our lives, but still have it be in our lives, because our kids are going to use it. Might as well teach them how to use it the correct way and have a solution.
Exactly. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think a lot of the books do try to illustrate the screen time problem. So that was my thinking, was like, well, let me give you some solutions then, rather than just fear and, you know, doom and gloom.
Yeah. And I'm assuming it is on Amazon and all places where books are sold, right?
100% true. Yeah.
There you go. And as we wrap up, for those floundering parents out there who just don't know where to start, what advice would you have for them?
I love this question. First of all, just to know you're not alone, and I'm not judging you, and that this is, I wish I could get all of the parents who reach out to me to talk to each other too, because I think there's a lot of shame around this for parents. Like, we feel like we've screwed up, or we should have done X, Y, Z, but we didn't. It is never too late to start. And again, I just can't emphasize enough that before you make screen time changes, you've got to start with the relationship with your kid. So in the book, I talk about like going backward to go forward. Like, sometimes that's going to look like sitting down with your kid and being like, tell me about what you're building in Minecraft. You could hate Minecraft, you could hate Roblox, whatever it is, but to sit down and be like, help me understand what you like about this and connecting over that before you leap to turn it off. How many times have I said, I wish I didn't have to, right? Because you're definitely not going to get anywhere if we start with the combative, judgmental, argumentative. So, you know, baby steps is like, small incremental change.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Start somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Have a little grace with yourself, especially yourself and your kids. So as we wrap up, where can people see what you were up to? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
All right. Shameless plug time. Well, I mean, the irony is not lost on me that I have a digital presence. So my website's a great place to start. It's thescreentimeconsultant.com. And of course I do have social media platforms on, you know, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, X now, I guess. I don't post a ton on that one, but, I also have people who work for me who help me post on social media. So I don't have to spend all my time there because I don't want to do that. So I definitely, you know, but it always does help to, I reach different audiences in different ways, as you know, from different platforms. So, that's it.
Yeah. And all that will be in the podcast description. So if you guys want to go check her out, she is doing amazing things. And thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Save the Kids podcast. If you'd like Save the Kids to come to your church, school, community, event, whatever it might be, please fill out a speaker form linked in the podcast description below. Always remember, you are wonderful, you are worthy, and you are worth it. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.